Hello and welcome to A-Zone Anno News for the week commencing the 28th of April 2008, brought to you by azoneanno.com. My name is Stuart Cameron. In this edition of A-Zone Anno News, as well as bringing you the latest news from the international nanotechnology industry, we'll hear about the first ever nanotechnology transistor, how engineers are closer than ever to building a nano-assembly machine, and how an Australian team is leading the world in the production of single photons. In this week's A-Zone Anno interview, Cameron Chai has an insightful chat with Karen Sinclair of Watermark, a firm of patent and trademark attorneys. These stories and more in this edition of A-Zone Anno News. Transistors are an indispensable building block in electric appliances, where they amplify weak electric currents. Now researchers have developed a new type of transistor that is 50 times more energy efficient than today's models. It's also the first to be developed using nanotechnology. This kind of transistor should be able to reduce energy consumption in mobile phones and computers so they won't have to be recharged so often. What's more, it can pave the way for communication in frequencies that are too high for today's technology. For some time, researchers have been stymied by the fact that transistors can't be reduced any further in size without overheating, since the electrons release so much energy. But the new model is made up of indium arsenide, where the electrons move more easily compared with silicon, the conventional semiconductor material in transistors. A new, low-temperature, catalyst-free technique for growing copper nanowires has been developed by researchers at the University of Illinois. The copper nanowires could serve as interconnects in electronic device fabrication and as electron emitters in television-like, very thin, flat-panel displays known as field emission displays. The researchers can grow forests of freestanding copper nanowires of controlled diameter and length, suitable for integration into electronic devices. The copper nanowires are grown on a variety of surfaces, including glass, metal and plastic, by chemical vapor deposition from a precursor. The size of the nanowires is controlled by the processing conditions, such as substrate, substrate temperature, deposition time and precursor feeding rate. To demonstrate the practicability of the low-temperature growth process, the researchers first grew an array of copper nanowires on a patterned silicon substrate. Then they fashioned a field emission display based on the array's bundle of nanowires. The first real steps towards building a microscopic device that can construct nanomachines have been taken by US researchers, with researchers describing an early prototype for a nanoassembler. In his 1986 book, The Engine of Creation, K. Eric Drexler set down the long-term aim of nanotechnology to create an assembler, a microscopic device, a robot that could construct yet smaller devices from individual atoms and molecules. For the last two decades, those researchers who recognize the potential have taken diminutive steps towards such a nanoassembler. Those taking the top-down approach have seen the manipulative power of the atom force microscope, a machine that can observe and handle single atoms, as one solution. Those taking the bottom-up approach are using chemistry to build molecular machinery. However, neither the top-down nor the bottom-up approach is yet to fulfill Drexler's prophecy of functional nanobots that can construct other machines on a scale of just a few billionths of a metre. Quantum cryptography may be essentially solved, but getting the funky physics to work on a disciplined computer network is a whole new headache. Cryptography is an arms race, but the finish line may be fast approaching. Up to now, each time the codemakers made a better mousetrap, code breakers bred a better mouse. But quantum cryptography, theoretically, could outpace the codebreakers and win the race forever. Already the current state of the art in classical encryption, 128-bit RSA, can be cracked with enough raw brute force computing power available to organisations like the US National Security Agency. And the advent of quantum computing will make it even simpler. The gold standard for secret communication will be truly dead. Quantum cryptography solves the problem, and it will overcome the remaining stumbling block, the distribution of the code key to the right person, by using quantum key distribution. QKD offers a theoretically uncrackable code, one that's easily distributed and works in a transparent manner. Even better, the nature of quantum mechanics means that if any eavesdropper tries to snoop on a message, the sender and receiver will both know. Dutch chemist Paul Poot has developed two attractive alternatives for allowing protein crystals to grow under weightless conditions. If the crystals are grown upside down in a strong magnetic field, fluid flows that disrupt crystal growth are suppressed. Therefore, high-quality proteins no longer need to be grown in space, but can be grown here on Earth. Protein crystals provide vital knowledge for drug development. The production of an effective drug requires knowledge of how biomolecules, such as body proteins, are constructed. If you want to know how proteins work, you must first of all determine their molecular structure using X-ray diffraction. This requires exceptionally high-quality protein crystals. However, allowing these to grow can be extremely difficult and sometimes even impossible. The presence of gravity gives rise to fluid flows in the crystal solution, which, in turn, disrupt the growth process. Undisturbed growth yields the finest crystals. In order to prevent fluid flows, the decision is often taken to grow the protein crystals in space. However, as this is very expensive and time-consuming, scientists are looking for new methods to create weightlessness on Earth. This experiment is the first in the world to demonstrate that a crystal can grow uniformly in a strong magnetic field. Iron nanoparticles designed to collect in lymph nodes containing metastatic cancer cells have proven that they can help physicians detect metastatic spread of prostate cancer. Now a team of investigators at Harvard Medical School has pilot phase data showing that these nanoparticles can detect lymph node metastases in a highly sensitive and specific manner in patients with renal cell carcinoma, which accounts for some 20% of kidney cancers. Recent reporting showed that dextran-coated iron oxide administered to 9 patients with kidney tumours could clearly identify lymph node metastases and distinguish them from benign lesions using magnetic resonance imaging. These results were confirmed by traditional histopathology techniques, revealing one false positive among the MR imaging results. MR imaging of lymph nodes did not miss detecting any metastases later identified by histopathology. The researchers conclude that these studies warrant a larger prospective clinical trial to prove that iron oxide nanoparticles can serve as non-invasive diagnostics for metastatic disease. A revolutionary cancer treatment using microscopic magnets to enable armed human cells to target tumours has been developed by researchers funded by the Biotechnology and Biological Sciences Research Council. Research shows that inserting these nanomagnets into cells carrying genes to fight tumours results in many more cells successfully reaching and invading malignant tumours. Using human cells as delivery vehicles for anti-cancer gene therapy has long been an attractive approach for treating tumours, but these cells usually reach tumours in insufficient numbers to effectively attack them. Now, a new magnetic targeting method has been developed to overcome this problem. The technique involves inserting nanomagnets into monocytes, a type of white blood cell used to carry gene therapy, and injecting the cells into the bloodstream. The researchers then placed a small magnet over the tumour to create a magnetic field and found that this attracted many more monocytes into the tumour. The world's first commercial source of individual photons using diamond-based quantum technology has been developed by Quantum Communications Victoria within the School of Physics at the University of Melbourne in Australia. The technology uses the unique properties of diamonds to produce single particles of light, or photons, on demand at room temperature. The device, which can be accessed with a standard optical fiber connection, has the potential to be used for many applications, including as a component in secure telecommunication systems, for quantum metrology, and other quantum-based applications. Further work is being undertaken in investigating the various other applications for the QCV single photon source, including additional quantum applications, microscopy, and optical sensing. Early diagnosis of a heart attack may now be possible using only a few drops of saliva and a new nano-bio chip, A multi-institutional team led by researchers at the University of Texas at Austin reported at a recent meeting of the American Association for Dental Research. The nano-biochip assay could someday be used to analyse a patient's saliva on board an ambulance, at the dentist's office or at a neighbourhood drugstore, helping save lives and prevent damage from cardiac disease. The device is the size of a credit card and can produce results in as little as 15 minutes. Many heart attack victims, especially women, experience non-specific symptoms and secure medical help too late after permanent damage to the cardiac tissue has occurred. These tests promise to dramatically improve the accuracy and speed of cardiac diagnosis. This week, Cameron Chai has an insightful chat with Karen Sinclair of Watermark, a firm of patent and trademark attorneys. Karen explains the importance of protecting intellectual property and talks about how finding a vacant technology space and driving your company into it can maximise your chances of commercial success.
This is Cameron Chai from azonano.com, and I've got with me today Karen Sinclair, who's a principal at Watermark, and who are our patent and trademark attorneys. How are you doing today, Karen?
I'm very well, thank you, Cameron. How are you?
Very well, thank you as well. So tell me, Karen, what do you guys do at Watermark?
Watermark is an intellectual property specialist firm, Cameron. Whilst we provide traditional patent and trademark attorney services, which is to say that we help people protect their innovation, both in the way of patents and brands and industrial designs, we specialise at Watermark in providing advice in relation to the management of those assets in someone's organisation.
And how do you guys interact with the nanotechnology community?
Well, just like any other technology that exists in the world, nanotechnology needs to be protected by intellectual property. And as the technology has developed, so has the need for exclusive market protection for it. So we have an increasing number of clients whose specialty is nanotechnology. And our objective for them is to find a space in the technology community, but more importantly, in the business community for their innovation so that it can commercially succeed.
And how is it that you help people commercially succeed?
Some of the information that we can provide is of tremendous assistance in allowing an organisation to strategically plan their growth and to position themselves in the marketplace. So, for example, a lot of people see intellectual property as, at worst, a cash sink, but at best a necessary evil for protecting their innovation. But they sometimes fail to see how intellectual property information, which is not theirs, which is in fact someone else's, can be used in their business to guide it in a more commercially appropriate direction. So, for example, information that is available from publicly available sources, just via simple things like the website, indeed even Google now have a Google Patents site, can be used in your business to strategically grow it. So, for example, we can provide information about the key innovators in a certain nanotechnology space, bearing in mind that, of course, that nanotechnology is not necessarily a new technology per se. It's about making old technologies of a micro or nano size. So we can provide information about who the key innovators in that area of interest are. Not only the companies themselves or the academic institutions themselves, but who the actual innovators are. And that can, for example, provide important information about who you might want to employ in your company. We can also provide information about where the white space areas are for research. So there is software around which analyses information in a certain patent classification, and patent classifications are directed to technology areas. There are a couple of classifications and many sub-classifications to do with nanotechnology these days. An analysis of the information in those areas will show where there is most intense research and development activity and where there is lesser intensity in activity. And assuming there's some sort of commercial angle on areas where there's less commercial intensity and intellectual property intensity, that can be a really good space for developing new products for market.
So basically, by coming to you, people can figure out where the gaps in the technology are and whether or not the technology might exist already, whether or not they're in fact wasting their time and money pursuing.
Indeed. The whole aim of the game is not to reinvent the wheel. The whole aim of the game is to invent something that nobody else has done before, which is going to give you an exclusive market position for which you can charge a premium price.
And the advantage of coming up and making sure they're in a unique technology space would be
that they do get to charge that premium price in the marketplace. Business makes the world go around. In order to be in business successfully, you need to make a profit. If you're sinking your money into intellectual property, then you need a return on that investment. And the only way you're going to get that return on investment is by partnering with people who have complementary technology to your own, possibly, or by having the wherewithal to be able to develop your own technology to market. And your technology is not going to find a space in the market if there's another product out there which provides similar advantages, and you're not going to be able to charge a premium price for your product if someone else is providing the same thing for less.
So the sort of services that you offer in being able to do all these, or to mine all this information out of patents and things like this, is this something that's easy for the average person to be able to do?
Some of the information is publicly available, as I said before, through public internet sites. Google Patents is an increasingly powerful site for searching the world's patent literature. And you can also do basic searching on the websites of the US Patent and Trademark Office and also on the patent site of the European Patent Office. But an analysis of that information is not something which is usually at the fingertips of your common punter, I suppose. Yeah, that's the sort of service that we provide over and above just the broad spread of information that you can drag out of those particular sources.
Okay, and you guys are also involved in what's called intellectual asset management. Can you tell me what that is exactly?
It's the kind of thing we've been talking about, Cameron, in fact. The concept of intellectual property is increasingly well understood in the marketplace. It's about getting government-granted rights for new technology and new brands and new designs. Intellectual assets is a broader class of property, if you like, in your organisation, and includes more than just patents, trademarks and industrial designs. It includes things like trade secrets, databases of information about your distributors or your contacts or your suppliers. And the way our business is developing is in supplying assistance to companies who want to manage more than just their patents, trademarks and designs, but all the information in their business which is unique to them, including such things as confidential information and databases and rapid processing systems and anything else which provides a unique edge to your business.
Okay, and just finally, are there any examples that you can tell us about areas that you've currently worked in?
Sure. One of the biggest projects that we've done over the last 12 months was with a Victorian and academic sector funded organisation called Nanotechnology Victoria, fondly known as Nanovic. And they're at a crucial stage in their development. They can only proceed into the next stage if they get more government funding and if they readjust themselves to suit the commercial world and try to drive towards some commercial outcomes. And so we conducted a project for them going on 12 months ago, which was an analysis of their intellectual property portfolio, but also an analysis of their intellectual assets, which included the documents surrounding their relationships with all their partners. And our analysis was about what rights they had as a result of those agreements with their partners, what freedom they had to commercialise the technology to which they had access, how the limitations on those licences would impact on their ability to grow and drive returns to the government. And so what they ended up getting was about a 40-page report from us about what their strengths and weaknesses were in the innovation space. And that's enabled them to drive through some new projects in the way of new organisations and to put together a framework for hopefully achieving more funding from the government.
We certainly hope that the information you were able to draft for those guys is a result of them being around for a lot longer, because they're actually good friends of ours as well. And we hope to be able to keep dealing with them in the distant future too, I suppose.
Indeed.
All right, Karen, thanks very much for letting us know what you guys do and how you guys help nanotechnology developers.
It's been a pleasure, Cameron.
Okay, thanks very much for your time.
Azo Nano Business News. Lockheed Martin and Rice University have announced the creation of an innovative strategic partnership to develop new technologies for a broad range of applications in electronics, energy and security. The Lockheed Martin Advanced Nanotechnology Center for Excellence at Rice University, or LANSA, will pair researchers from Lockheed Martin with Rice experts in carbon nanotechnology, photonics, plasmonics and more. LANSA will be based at Rice's Richard E. Smalley Institute for Nanoscale Science and Technology. Nanotechnology promises to impact everything from the clothes people wear to the energy they consume, and it will revolutionise the systems and services at Lockheed Martin to deliver to government clients. The Swiss Retailers Organisation, in collaboration with the Innovation Society, introduces the world's first code of conduct for consumer products containing applications of nanotechnology. The requirements mentioned in the code will have far-reaching consequences for producers and suppliers, since they'll have to pass on decision-relevant data along the value chain. The Swiss Retailers Organisation, among whose members are the most important actors in Swiss retailing, published a code of conduct for the handling of nanotechnology in consumer products. In the code, the members commit to highest possible transparency for consumers and to the application of the precautionary principle in the face of a lack of specific legal rulings. US Senator Charles E. Schumer announced a landmark agreement that will create the first ever partnership between the federal government and the University of Alabama's College of Nanoscale Science and Engineering that will bring federal research expertise and resources to the nanoscale campus. In the wake of securing nearly $900,000 for the Center for National Competitiveness in Nanoscale Characterization, which triggered an additional investment of nearly $15 million US, Schumer today announced he brokered an agreement between the center and the National Institutes of Standards and Technology, which will help further advance the already successful collaboration between NIST and CNSE by providing the framework for both organizations to share research, equipment, staff, and other key resources. NanoSite Limited, the nanoparticle characterization company, has recently received their 100th purchase order for their unique nanoparticle tracking analysis system, which counts individual particles in liquid. Professor Stefan Petersen of the University of Aalborg in Denmark has selected the NanoSite LM10 to study the build-up of multi-layered targeted nanoparticle drug delivery systems. His particular attraction to the LM10 is its ability to not just size particles, but to investigate the potential to provide information about an individual particle's refractive index. Well, that was Azo Nano News for the week commencing the 28th of April, 2008. If you have any nano courses, events or exhibitions you'd like to promote to a global nanotech audience, don't forget you can list them for free at azonano.com. To read expanded versions of the stories you've heard about in this podcast, or to stay in touch with the world of nanotechnology, please visit www.azonano.com. If you'd like to send us feedback or let us know about nanotechnology news in your part of the world, please email us at podcast@azonano.com. I'm Stuart Cameron. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.